Today, on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, we're talking about the Quantum Leap reboot.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech, it is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Today is it's one of the first editions of what I'm calling First Look, Last Look. Okay, today I'm going to take a first look at the new reboot of the TV show Quantum Leap, and joining me is my good friend Anna Marie Swanson. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
She's watching a TV show with Silas Lindenstein, we'll say, for that. So what I'm going to do on this set of series is I want to do an episode where after the first episode drops, I talk about the TV show that we're watching. And then once it's all done, either with the same guest or another one, to see how it measured up to our expectations from what happened on the first one. So it's like a first look, last look. That's what I'll come up with a better name for it later, but right now that's it. Today's episode is First Look, Quantum Leap reboot. Now, the reason Anna Marie is on is Anna Marie has, for me, been the longest. I've known that she was a fan of Quantum Leap more than anyone else. Suddenly when I mentioned it, suddenly a bunch of people started mentioning I love that show. I was like, well, you never talked about it. And I've been talking to Anna Marie about this show for like over a decade. So she's coming on the show to talk about Quantum Leap. So this new reboot 30 years later, but first a little bit about the first one, right? Quantum Leap, story of Sam Beckett steps into a quantum accelerator and vanishes to realize and wakes up in a body that is not his own. I'm practically reciting the intro, right? So he wakes up in other people's bodies and lives their life, but he's in their bodies, and that's what everyone else sees, is the body of the person he jumped into. He can only communicate with his partner, Al, appears in the form of hologram that only Sam can see or hear, right? So he goes, and it seems to be that he's kind of writing history, what once went wrong. He corrects and then corrects time, and then he leaps into another body. That was the premise of the first show. Now, spoiler alert for anyone who listened to the who never saw this first series. I'm going to talk about the first series a little here. I'm going to end it for you. At the end, Sam never leaps home. That's what it says. No. It says he never leaps home. Mm-hmm. A little end. They misspelled his name, but he never leaps home. No, they misspelled somebody's name. It was just hilarious. he fixed Al. Now, here's a question I have, Anna Marie, in this, mm-hmm. In the original series.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if they changed it or if it's a... When he's correcting what once went wrong, because later on, during the series, they brought in like the Devil Leaper, right? The Devil Leaper.
Evil Leaper,
Evil Leaper, who would go and change history. Was he writing the wrongs that bad Leaper did?
I don't think that was ever established. I think that what he was writing is writing, meaning correcting, not writing, as in writing something down. Things that took a turn for the worse in someone's lives, whereas if they hadn't happened, it would have been more beneficial for that person.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's really messing with the butterfly, right? It's
a big absolutely. Butterfly. Like, this doesn't even talk about the butterfly effect.
Because here's what's interesting. Because like they say, oh, this is what went wrong. I always wondered about the memory portion of it, right? Because really, mm-hmm. should Al never remember what went wrong or whatever, you know, the road, right?
There's something to say about that.
There's one episode that I feel like messes with the whole thing that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets into Lee Harvey Oswald. He left his Lee Harvey Oswald, right? And he stopped, and he thinks that he failed the mission because JFK still died.
That wasn't what he was there to do.
Right. And then, but Al goes, oh, no, but Jackie lived. In the original timeline, Jackie died, Sam. And we're like, what? What? So it was the first time that they ever indicated that we were even in a time that our timeline understood a different event.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's the only time they did that.
I don't remember another one. And now that I've watched the first one, I want to go back and watch the whole series again so that I can.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I just want to watch it again.
Yeah. Fantastic series.
Yeah. So I think, but it didn't change out. So time travel is all kinds of screwy throughout sci-fi. So there are some time travel established theories where once you change the thing, then the people don't remember the old way.
Right.
But Al did remember the old way because I don't know why, but they have him outside of the time remembering how it was and being able to report on how it is, which is actually, it's a kind of a cool thing about that. But then that also, so in the end of the original series, the reason Sam, well, I don't know if it's the reason, but a reason Sam never left home was because the wrong that he righted was he fixed Al's life. So Al got divorced from his first wife, who was the love of his life. And then he had five marriages and it's like kind of led a more unhappy life. Sam fixed that. So they never got divorced. And what I then wonder then is because then if he never got divorced, he never became a part of the Quantum Project. He never became a hologram. So Al lost his guide. And not Al, Sam lost his guide.
But it would have a different guide, right?
Al's.
But not as good.
He's stuck in this project that he has started, but he no longer has Al. Al never got involved. So what happened to Sam later, because he fixed Al's thing and he never went down the trajectory where he started with the Quantum Project? Or maybe he did in a different way, but we never know that. Does that make sense?
Well, see, I didn't interpret it that way though.
Because he made that choice,
right?
That he could see that he could fix Al's life and never get home. And he chose to save his friend. And then in that we were like, he's now by himself.
Oh, wait. So the new one makes a problem of that. But also my second point would be, I thought that once he realized that he was in control, mm-hmm. he just decided that he was going to keep fixing things.
Now that's possible. And I don't remember clear enough that specific thing, but he doesn't have the person to say, this is why you're here. This is,
well, they would have just had someone
Ziggy
else, right?
And all that. Well, but not having Al a part of it, did that happen in the same way? Like, we don't know.
Somebody would have been different now, but in the reboot, they mm-hmm. said, like, because this is, so this, well, it's a reboot, but it's actually.
It's a continuation.
It's kind of more of a continuation. We call it a reboot. It's not a reimagination.
Later.
Yeah. It's 30 years later. It's like a sequel. And they acknowledge Sam Beckett and they know he's lost in time.
Mm-hmm.
But they also mentioned that Al worked with them on the project.
Yes.
But that he died a few years ago, which he did in real life. Right.
Yes. So then that would kind of mess up my original thing.
Yeah.
But I was so excited.
You're right that I don't. So we don't know now.
And maybe it was a different context.
Sam's daughter is involved in this. No,
not
I mean,
Sam's, Al.
Al's daughter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's mad.
Yes.
So she might blame him for losing her father. I don't know. Okay, so the recasting of this, or the continuation of it.
Mm-hmm.
How about episode? Just yes. First impression. What was your? Was it a love it, like it, or lose it? Because that's
it was
my
a like
system.
It.
Is a like it. Okay.
It was a like it.
I
yes,
agree. It was
exactly.
a like it for me.
It was a first pilot episode.
Yeah.
So it had issues. But I have not watched a pilot, maybe with the exception of Firefly, that was perfect in my eyes.
of an entire world, you mean?
Of setting up the story so that like all of my favorite shows, the first season was a little rough. Just there while they were figuring themselves out. And then they got their stride and then they became amazing.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot of shows that right out of the gate have every single thing aligned exactly perfectly. The writing is a little choppy, or some of the performances are not quite as strong, or there was some confusion with the story, like something.
Right.
And this kind of fell into that category of, I think it's a strong premise. I think it's going to be better. I liked it because it was what it was. Like I was going to love it because it's Quantum Leap, but it felt like it has a lot of room to grow. They laid a lot of groundwork of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple things that I wish they had done differently, but I liked it overall. How about you? What did you think?
I liked it, and I was a little hesitant because I was a little, look, I'm not somebody who's like, what's with the woke casting making every, I like, I don't, you know, I'm fine with that. I'm fine. Them. Yeah. They should, it should be diverse stories.
The non-binary character is my favorite character. I love him. Her, it, them. Love them.
I was a little concerned. I was a little concerned at first that they're just, like, they're cookie cuttering it with the casting. I was like, because I'm like, oh, a first, Asian American lead. Oh, and, we got our African American. Oh, now, and a non-binary. We're like making sure we cover our bases here.
Cut
like,
all
on everything. Like, oh, geez, what are you doing? Like, I hope the focus is on the acting. Ernie Hudson, I have very mixed feelings with a lot.
Oh yeah.
I like him, but then I kind of don't like him. Like I felt like I have this Ghostbusters quandary with him of like, why did he just show up at the end? I like this comp, these three people. And then just suddenly he's there just all of a sudden. So I always had mixed feelings, but I really liked him at his little thing in the last Ghostbusters reboot. But, so I was like, what's he doing? Like he's a military guy. I don't know. I really, guys, we're spoiling this. We are spoiling this first episode.
Yes,
as well.
I was going to ask you, are we trying to not, or can we just
spoil it because it's to talk about this.
Good. If you haven't watched it, don't listen.
Yeah. Till later. Listen till later. The twist at the end to find out that it was actually his wife that was supposed to leap and he jumped in for some reason. We don't know yet.
Yes.
I did like the idea of the female leaper. I don't know. That was like, that would have been a little different. I would have actually liked that a little, though. I guess the bad leaper was female.
She was female. Yeah.
But here's what I'm interested in. Okay. Because she is now taking Al's place.
Yes.
Right. She is the AI character.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm curious about, she's not telling them they're married, right?
No. Well, as soon as she realized he has no memory, she didn't say a thing, and that's an interesting choice.
Right. Now in the original, he had a Swiss cheese memory, did not remember he was married, right? And but Al's like, just not telling him anything about the future because he didn't want to corrupt it, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we have the one episode where he switches bodies with Al and goes in the future and suddenly remembers, holy shit, I'm married. I'm so sorry. I've been cheating on you. Or like, I've been sleeping with all these women. And she's like, it's all right. Also, I was kind of like, yeah, but he's in another body. Is it really?
It's not really him.
Is it his body? I don't know. That's also confusion because they talk about like, oh, nobody, kids can tell it's Sam. They can see that he's different because they're innocent and they're not like falling for the trick. So they can see his real body. That was always a little odd. So I'm just curious, are they going to do this without him having a relationship with other people? Is she, is he going to start falling in love with people and she has to sit there and go,
I can't say anything. I think that that's it because that's drama. And that is like the separation of the whole thing with the quantum particles, once entangled, the part of the theory of entanglement. I think so. And I think that that character's science brain kicked in as soon as he didn't remember anything. And she went, I need to let this happen as it's going to happen. And I'm not going to color anything with what previously is.
Yeah.
Although you can tell she's like, there's so much going on here. So,
We had a friend complained that they felt like he just suddenly got into it, just accepted it too quickly.
Yes.
And so I have mixed feelings about that in general. Like a part of me is like, he did. Mm-hmm. I don't know what my flight or fight response would be in that situation. But also, I don't think they, and from a storytelling point of view, I don't think they could have done that or that it would have been successful, because otherwise you're just retelling the same story of him like, whoa, I'm so confused and now I'm playing baseball. I mean, the first Quantum Leap, I really did like. I like the way they introduced by having him jump into three different bodies and figure, because you're also figuring out what's going on.
Yeah.
We all kind of know what's going on. So we kind of like, get to the story. What's going on now? You don't have to, you got to. And I do hope Sliders, this old show Sliders that I loved, one of my favorite shows of all time. I always liked when sometimes they would do these episodes where the very beginning they slid into somewhere and then slid out real quick and you saw a new world for a second. So I like when they would do, like, I wouldn't mind if they were in, like, if he goes to like a place, if he does a two episode, like, hey, pops in,
fixes it real quick and goes to the next thing.
Like somebody drops their keys and he picks it. Hey, sir. And hands it to him and it's Henry Ford or something. And he goes, they go, oh, whoa. And then he disappears again. Like,
that
we dropped this. I would like that if they do some quickie ones like that.
I
used to love that. Oh, another part of the old one I love that I hope they continue. I don't know if they will, because modern storytelling seems to always want so many different stories going on. That you could watch them in almost any order, because they had season arcs, maybe a season something happened. But really, they could almost drop any episode into anywhere because he's just leaping into another body, whatever.
Yeah.
Episodic formula, right? Just right
it
there.
Very much is kind of like Cheers or like the SVU or Law and Order in the early days, where it literally each episode was encapsulated within its own thing.
Yeah.
And there might be a loose thing
Wing did that. Like a lot of shows did that. But the fun part about watching those old shows would be just like, oh, it's another just Quantum Leap episode. And then you're like, then they say something about like the Dark Leaper shows up and they're like, you again. And you're like, again, there was another one. What are you talking about? Now I have to watch every episode on syndication until that one shows up.
So I know what's happening.
Right.
Yes.
Now you can at least go back and go, oh, what happened? Oh, let me go find that and read it.
So the other thing with the same thing. And so I kind of agree that with our friend that was just like, it just happened too fast and they were too accepting. I'm realistically, absolutely. I'm willing to let that go because we're in a sci-fi universe.
Yeah.
Also, storytelling now in cinema and in TV is way more amped up than it was when this was 30 years ago. Like, we are used to Game of Thrones, where 16 people are dying in each episode, and 24, like, where everything happened. So, like, we're in an immediate gratification society right now. And so, I don't know that the average viewership of people who are watching primetime television on a Monday night would sit around and watch a very slow story unfold.
Not
because we're not built for it anymore.
Not on NBC. Not, I mean, not on a show that is dropping slowly anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, you have to keep your viewers engaged, and yeah, it's each week, and even streaming, it doesn't stream until the next day, and so you get them one by one. You don't get 10 episodes all at once.
Yeah,
so
you can do it a slow fold on Netflix if they drop it there, right? You can do that.
Yeah, because they're like, I'm going to watch this show, and you've got a whole episode, or, and you're like, yeah, I'll give us several episodes.
I will say,
you got a whole season.
People like Apple TV have earned it too, like with something like Severance, where they're not. They take the faith and they guarantee we'll do 10 episodes. Okay. We'll do 10. We'll do 10. We promise.
And
we
tell the story 10. In the way that the story needs to be told, which might be a slow burn
and people
to get
have,
to the
but people
important things.
They trust it. People trust if it's on Apple TV. Nobody trusts network television to do that. They don't, because
well,
too many shows have canceled.
Right,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're like, even one of the premise that you like, you're kind of like, do we want to watch it? Because they're just going to cancel it. Because like after 6 episodes, and I won't know what happened.
Maybe
they might.
Absolutely.
So, like I started watching the one NBC has about the time travel one that they go back and fell into the tar pits in Brea and their dinosaur time. I'm like, watched a few episodes and I was like, well, I mean, I kind of like it, but it's not like it's going to have a second season or anything. And I just found out it has a second season. So I'm like, oh, I can go watch I'll go finish watching the first.
I'm invested. There
we
go.
Okay, good. Yeah. If I know there's at least a finish to a season. That's the biggest, my gripe about network television is not that the shows were even bad. It's just that they won't commit to it. And if they're not getting something, they're gone. Because they too are instant gratification. If we don't have a hit,
numbers, you have to show us the numbers. And if we don't see the numbers, then no.
And
some
of the best shows only ended up because of faith of the show. Like Cheers, as you brought up. Mm-hmm. Cheers was like one of the last rated shows on the network. And they just believed
in
it.
And it stands a test of time. Like they're so well written and it's so well built. It's just, it's so good.
And so my hope is that, and I don't know, did you feel like this had a network TV feel to it? There was a little bit that I was like,
commercials.
It's almost a little polished. It was just a little, I was like, y'all too a little slick. Everyone's a little slick here. This feels like a lot of your, it just has this feel of like, this is an NBC sci-fi mystery. There is this world that they live in.
Possibly.
A little too slick.
Yeah.
That was my biggest turn off was the tone. There was a tone.
But it also didn't feel high budget because like, the explosion, like the green screen's work is not amazing. And it like the,
you know, people are so picky about that. I don't even bother. Like, unless
it doesn't bother me at all.
Unless I see a slice of green on it or something, I'm like, whatever, I'm watching the story because I feel like everyone's gotten so picky on that. And it's like, you know what?
We've been spoiled with all of the high production quality thing that so many things are out there.
But even a bad green screen now is flipping amazing.
Oh, right? So much better than one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take me out. Like I notice it, but I'm not like, oh my gosh, it's not believable at all. Like I would rather them spend the money on the story and on the cast and on the stuff than special effects really.
Yeah.
Just because I don't care. I mean, special effects
some
are cool.
Of my favorite movies and such have been, they were low budget. And it forced them to get creative and do the story well. An example, not even related to this closely, Red Dawn. There's a movie in the 80s called Red Dawn about the Soviets attacking the U.S. It avoids it. And a bunch of teens fight back. Patrick Swayze stars. Very wonderful film.
Okay.
They did a remake of that. Mm-hmm. And the remake was horseshit. Because of the budget. They had the budget to spend on big explosions and special effects that they didn't have for the first one. So the first one was forced to rely on the script.
Better storytelling.
Better storytelling. It had to.
Yeah.
I mean, I've also been told that, a bunch of films like this, they do that because they want to sell them overseas who doesn't care about... where they think they don't care about the story, that it's all just special effects, which I also find to be malarkey Because when I watch foreign films, I'm always amazed by, gosh, this is so inventive. This is such a good story. We never do that here. So absolutely. I don't buy that. I think the excuse is that they don't have to work on the story as long as it goes boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. And has special effects. So
yeah.
I agree with you. I hope they don't give them money. Don't give them money. No special effects money. So they're forced to work the story and make the story that compelling.
Yeah. I do like that this has three storylines. It has the story of Ben, who's leaping, and so him and Addison. And then there's Addison back at the lab with all the people at the lab trying to figure stuff out. And then there's this. So then there's the mystery of, why did he change the code? Why did he leap? Why did he not tell her? The cryptic voicemail video message of, I'm doing this because it's important. I can't explain it. I love you.
Yeah.
You'll learn later. Like that whole thing. Why did that happen? And the Al's daughter of, why is she involved and what's going on? It's very intriguing because there's three separate things going on, and we are then going to learn slowly as they kind of unfold. So I like having those. And I think you had talked about storytelling today. They want to have multiple storylines going. And I think that's, again, it's our immediate gratification society where the one storyline isn't enough. You have to have multiple things to keep people's interest and keep everything.
It's funny that it's more that they almost have to be more overt with it, because that's classic. There was always the A and B storyline. That was always there, but it's like there has to be two big mysteries.
Yeah. Well, in Quantum Leap, there was the main story of him leaping, and then there was the under thing of how do we get him home.
There was a thing you had to fix, but there was usually like a secondary thing you had to fix. Like
sometimes,
I need to fix this, but also I should teach this kid how to dance or something. Yeah. Like while he's
This is true. There were a lot of like extra bonus things. Yeah. It just made it super enjoyable. I should say
all the good shows have A, B, and plots. A and B plot. little ones going on.
Well, it's also good storytelling, especially then when the B interweaves with the A, as opposed to them being two separate things.
I did something controversial to myself at the end of this episode.
Did you watch this
season? It says coming this season on Quantum Leap at the end of it.
No, I don't think that. Well, I watched it in real time. It must have.
Yeah.
Because it was after the thing, and it showed snippets of him in like five different things. But the
coming on, like where they had the clips of what's going to be happening in this season.
I think so, because I think I watched whatever was on.
Did you? Because I don't know. Because I'm like, I don't know if you want to. Like, I've not read anything about this. I'm strictly going off of what I saw.
Me either. And I don't really remember, except to have images.
Okay.
Because
I think there is a profound change in the show that I don't know if you care about.
I don't know that I know. I remember. So don't tell me. Okay. Unless you want to talk about it, and then I'll try to remember.
Wow. So. No, I can talk about it at the end. Let's see how they do.
Sure. Yeah.
To their system. Here's a question. In the old series.
Yes.
They would be trying to get info from the person's body who Sam switched with.
Because they appeared in the holding room.
Yes.
Yeah.
They did not seem to acknowledge that he was in a holding room at all, that there was a holding room.
No. And I don't know, it maybe isn't called that. It's called something different, but yes.
But they didn't say anything about like, oh, this guy's sitting in here.
Yeah. Because really, where did he go? Is he just like in the void? Like his and Janet's void, like in The Good Place?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, because that was an established thing that they did over and over again. So I was kind of like, where is it? Why aren't they talking to the dude?
Can't you talk to that? Yeah. But also they, maybe they weren't aware that would happen. Maybe it doesn't happen. It sounds like they knew a lot about this and still they're like, no. And so maybe the new code that he uploaded changed a whole bunch of stuff.
Maybe that happened.
We don't know anything about that, except that it's all different. It's not what anybody talked about. is brand new, and he decided to do it all on his own with the help of Al's daughter. Right. We find out later. Now, I kind of wish they hadn't said who she was. I kind of wish that they had, because we saw her ring in the beginning.
Yeah.
There was just a picture of the ring. And I kind of wish that they had, they said, here's the footage that we have, and they have a picture of the ring. And then maybe there was like a really subtle thing of like, historically, here's Al, like a picture of Al, and he's wearing the ring or something like that. Like not overt of, oh, it's his daughter, find her. Like,
yeah.
I kind of wish there was a little bit more mystery instead of being like,
we are back at the, I don't know if they will do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't know if they will let a slow play happen like that. They're like, we got to put this in. The execs want that because they're going to.
Well, I was super excited when she showed a picture of Al. I was like, yay. It was really cool.
A minimal had to be there for fan service of a.
Well, yes, but what they could have done was they could have done. It's a special ring for people who are in the Navy at this particular rank. And then show a picture of Al, and they could have left it at that. And then we would have gone, because at that point we didn't know if he died. We didn't know any of that stuff. And so that could have been a really neat little teaser to go, oh, it's Al is involved somehow, but we don't know how. And we're like, but, and everybody who knows it is going to go, but Dean Stockwell's dead. How do they do it?
You know, Scott Bakula, I thought he was a producer on it, and he's not.
No, he is not involved in this one at any way.
And here's a question. Is he lying? Do you think he's lying?
I don't think he's lying. But what I hope, because as soon as I read a snippet, I don't know if it was Twitter or an article, and he said, I was approached. We decided to not be involved. So I am in no way involved with this one. I wish them the best. I hope that it goes well. And then another tweet or article interview, I don't remember from the guy who plays Ben Song, I think, who said the invitation is always open and we hope that he's open to collaborating at some point. I really, really, really want the end of this to be that Sam comes home.
Hmm.
That they somehow figure out a way to bring Sam home.
Well, because they could write what once went wrong, that he didn't get home, right?
That is a write that did go wrong. Yeah. So I'm holding out hope. I don't have big hopes at all, but how cool would that be? Especially if he left, like if we see he did have a cameo and like he's somebody else and he's somebody else and one of comments on something and wait a minute, are you quantum visit? Are you quantum leap? Wait, are you leaping? Are you leaping? What? Like,
you know, years ago, I joked about my fan fiction of him leaping, of Biden getting elected in the blue and he leaves home. And I was like, hey, that's theoretically possible now. I wonder if they would actually do that.
We had that conversation of Quantum Leap. And I was like, and at what point did it happen? And it was, he leapt in at the moment that Biden said, shut up, man, in the debate.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Where he could've,
that was yours. And I was like,
it, where he switches it and everyone goes, oh, okay, I'll vote for him. Like,
and then maybe he leaps out when the election is certified or something. I don't know, but it absolutely. So that made me laugh. But yeah, so as soon as I found out, you told me that we were going to be talking about this one. When I watched the episode, then I sat down and I wrote a bunch of notes.
What also could be a funny episode if that's the moment that Trump turned blue. Right. And correct. Because you know what would be funny is if like Sam Beckett's been stuck in Trump for 7 years, like trying to get out. He's like, OK, well, I'll just call everyone. I'll just say something completely obscene and no one will vote for me. And it's like, oh, my God. And they're like, and Al's keeps going, dude, what are you doing? You've now been elected to 4 terms in office. Well, you got to stop. And he's like, I don't know what to do, man. Like, he just keeps trying to do
everything. There's so many things that have gone wrong. I can't write them all.
I can't. He's just like doing things wrong on purpose so that he can try to, it's
totally
like,
bad.
To get him not elected. Yeah. And he keeps going opposite. Like, oh, that's it. I wrote my fan fiction. I'm here to take over from here.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Yes. That would be very, very, very funny.
Okay, is this possibly, I don't watch a lot of network TV now that I know of, but
I don't watch a lot of TV.
Is this the highest profile, do you think, non-binary character we've
I think
now?
So. Well, it's on a network show.
On a network show, that's what I mean.
That's airing in real time.
Yeah.
There are a ton of shows now that have non-binary characters that are very prominent in their leads, but I don't know of a lot of primetime network shows that have a lot of representation of non-binary or even LGBTQ, although that's getting more common, but not a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's super, super cool. And I just love them. They're fun to watch. The choices that they make and the delivery of the lines, and they're just fun to watch. Like, this is an absolutely intriguing character that is captivating. And I really, really, really hope that they get a lot more screen time, because I want to know what's going on with this character. And I love their interaction with everybody. So I think it's very cool.
I'm trying to be forgiving on the pilot part. I did feel like, I actually thought I felt like I learned more about them than I wanted to yet. I guess I will say that about a bunch of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I liked in Stargate how I was learning about the main people first and learning about that. And then I slowly started finding out about General Hammond and his past.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that's a trope that I'm stuck in.
Are you talking about Stargate the movie or Stargate the television show?
The show.
Okay. Right? I never watched the show. I only watched the movie.
Oh, okay. Oh, my gosh.
I didn't purposely avoid it. I just never got to it.
Right.
Sorry.
It was actually not easy to watch. Like, you had to find it. Like, it wasn't airing easily.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like they were just, I was like, why are you telling me everyone's life story right now? I just want to know.
Like a lot of exposition.
Lead. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Well, just on every character. It wasn't like, I was like, you know, back in my day, I was just like, you know, well, there would be an episode that you learn more about this one character. This one character gets more involved in this. And I felt like they were like, you're trying to let me know about everybody because that's what you pitched in the meeting, like what they were going to be like and where they're going to go. I don't know. I'll see. I mean, the new episode's airing tonight, so we'll see if they slow that down a little and
I don't know.
On the story.
Well, yeah.
Because I was like, there's a lot of stories going on in this.
There is a bunch of stories.
And I'm fine with lots of long game stories. I'm not watching this for an ensemble show. I want to know
it's
where
it's turning
he's
into
leaping.
An ensemble show.
I don't know where he's leaping. I want to see them deal with. What I really loved about Quantum Leap was how they dealt with the first one was dealing with societal issues and how we saw it and using the science fiction as the safe space where Al had to be confronted with his homophobia and, you know, maybe like somewhat of the racism. I forget if I don't think he had racism, but he was kind of like, I feel like I remember Al, like he was kind of from an area that he's like, yeah, well, Sam, you gotta be careful here.
There was the whole when he leapt into the segregated South.
Yeah.
Episode. Dangerous. There were multiple episodes there, I think. I can't remember.
We had at least a few. If not that one character, he went into a couple other ones.
And it was cool because then you got to see the social commentary of this is how it is now and here, and how can we do this better?
Yeah.
How should we be doing this better?
And I mean, they dealt with women's rights, women's roles. They dealt with I'm trying not to say wrong words. Mentally.
Right. Yes.
Not.
Yeah. No. When he leapt into the boy who had Down syndrome.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And
they're so like they had all these different things that you could deal with.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a fun one about a gambler or whatever, like just like, oh, a little mafia guy maybe or
well, yes. So just, I there's an episode he was on. 14 trains of thought at the same time. Who was the dad on Full House who recently passed? Who's a comedian? Bob Saget.
Bob Saget, yeah.
He had a podcast that was called Bob Saget's Here for You. And it started in the pandemic where he would just call people up randomly and say, how are you doing? Well, I'm here. Can I listen? So about several months ago, Scott Bakula was on because they are good friends. They were good friends. And Bob Saget was on an episode of Quantum Leap where they were singers together.
Oh, yes. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yes. And they talked about that episode. And this is like an hour plus podcast. And so I just listened to that interview. It was so delightful. It was wonderful.
I'm going to have to go look that up. Yeah.
Do that. Do. It is wonderful. And it's so just to listen to Scott Bakula talk about Quantum Leap and his experiences on Quantum Leap. And he talked about other stuff too. Like the whole thing isn't Quantum Leap specific, but there's probably a good 15 or 20 minutes talking about Quantum Leap, which was really neat. So that was cool.
Well, maybe Scott Bakula fan, so I like to listen to stuff that he does.
I've started looking for Scott Bakula interviews and Scott Bakula because
I
just
you're making
him.
Me want to go watch the original. I might have to carve it in some time.
It is on Hulu, maybe?
Probably. I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I have all the DVDs, so I'm going to bust out my DVDs.
You know, I've probably never watched it in order. I don't think I've ever been able to.
Like I don't think we did either. We watched it in college and it was in syndication. And so we would try.
Yeah.
But I mean,
as much as they did, like, right.
We caught whatever was on.
But
what
I wasn't
was
recording it to watch in order.
Oh, I did record it. I think the second time it was syndicated. Yeah.
Okay.
On videotape, VHS. I think I still have them.
Well, I did do that with Buffy. They were showing them in order. I guess I was doing that because I had to in order because we would miss the first 20 minutes when we got home because it started at 5 and we didn't get
there. Yeah. And I did it with Charmed and I just watched everything.
I'll say what's definitely one of the things of technology that is better now is I remember like Buffy was playing 2 episodes in a row at 5 and at 6. Mm-hmm. And so if we got home or 6 and 7 like that, right? But if we got home at 5:30, and because because the story would continue, we had to wait until both episodes had been recorded until we could start watching.
To go back and watch the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, so you're like, I can't jump in
the
middle.
We couldn't even watch the next episode live. And we couldn't even turn on the TV. I can't even remember. Like, maybe we could have, but we could have to avoid the channel.
But you can't change
the
channel.
When you had to like hold the, it was like, well, you're recording whatever that channel is on, right? And just, that's how old yes. Oh my God, I should tell Sierra about that. You know,
she'll be like, you're lying, Dad, now.
You could set it for 8 o'clock, but you had to leave it on that channel. Leave it on number 3. And then you could... You record whatever's on there.
Absolutely.
I remember someone once went and watched something else that I had it set to record the next day, and they changed the channel on the cable box. And so I look at my show, I'm like, what the hell is this? This isn't my show. No. Mom, you got to set it back to 12. Come on, Mom. Anyway.
Yes. So I wrote down a bunch of notes.
Should he read
when I watched it?
Did you?
I did.
What do you got?
Because,
what else do you have?
Okay, so I have thoughts on Quantum Leap. I liked it. That was first of all.
Okay.
I liked the lead. I thought he had good levels and I thought he was believable. And I liked that he was kind.
Well, yeah, I wanted to look up the other stuff he'd been in because I remember.
Yeah,
him.
Not a lot. None of these actors have a huge IMDb. Like they're pretty, well, Ernie Hudson does because he's been around a while. But the other ones don't have a whole lot. Did they not have any theme music or credits?
Oh,
right. Because I was waiting after they had the intro thing and I was, and then I had the whole thing running in my head because once you established where he was, then there was a, oh, and then it would cut to the credits and it was the da 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 da. So that was the Quantum Leap theme. And then they had that whole thing, and that's where they would show the images and the actor, Dean Stockwell, Scott Bakula, and then they would have the pictures of them, kind of like Firefly. Like, they would do that. And all shows that I remember watching on television, I don't know that they have one for this one. Maybe they do.
I'm gonna need to watch that again because I'm like, now you say that, I don't remember.
I don't remember either. So my note is no theme music? Question mark. I like that we met the team of people in the lab. In the original, we really didn't see them at all. There's like one person in a couple episodes, maybe, of what's going on back in the lab, but we just don't see it. I love that it's still Ziggy. Ziggy's the computer. And that's awesome. And then I have Ian as my favorite. I like the mystery of why you're with the new code. Intrigued that Al is still a part of it somehow. And then we were talking about that you're telling us everything. Some of the writing felt heavy-handed and exposition heavy.
Yeah.
But I don't know how else they would have done it for a pilot. Like a pilot, you have to give a fair bit of exposition to set up the world. And so there's this fine line that I'm not entirely sure how else to do. It's hard to make exposition not sound like exposition, especially when you're looking for it. So, and everybody who has watched pilots and knows anything about writing and stuff is kind of looking for the exposition. And so when they cleverly disguise it, it's really cool, but it's really hard to do that. And so I don't know that they could have done anything else.
That's a good point.
I have, oh boy, is now oh shit. Because at the end, when he left, you hear him go, oh, shh, and then it cuts away. But Sam would always, after he leapt into the next one, he would go, oh boy, or oh boy, or like, oh boy was the word that he used, and the inflection changed on what situation he found him in. And now it seems to be, oh shit. So
I wondered we'll if they see. Were gonna...
We'll see if like, it carries through.
Well, I thought it was like did he do it the first time and the second time?
Not the first time. The first time he woke up and he's like, he didn't know what happened. So that was the beginning of the Swiss cheese memory and then no idea. But this one, he woke up, he was like, Addison, where are you? Addison, he's in the space shuttle launching. Yeah. So that, I think he earned an oh shit there.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it's going to carry through.
Oh boy is so 80s. I mean, in some ways, like people wouldn't, I was like, I couldn't, I mean, would, okay, if he had said, oh boy, would you have been like, eh?
I think I would have been like, oh, they're trying to keep it like this is a callback and a challenge because it is dated. It's very dated. And I don't know how well that would have played.
I mean, I said that and now I'm thinking of all the times I've said, oh boy. Oh boy. No, yeah. I mean, I could say it now and not feel.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, so oh boy. That was interesting.
Would have been really funny.
Then they
get together on one episode and they both go, oh boy. What?
just for that. Exactly. They're in the same league. Yes. That would be really cool. I like that they still have the percentages. Ziggy says there's a 79% chance you're here to do blah, blah, blah. I think that's cool. I like the different dynamic of the Leaper and the hologram, that they have a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting, and I think it also, when pitching this show, the network probably said, how is it different than the original? Because you can't do the same story. And so like this, well, their romantic interest, only she doesn't know, he doesn't know. And so I think that that's probably it. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And then on IMDb, I want to know, why is the top billing for the girl and the non-binary character and not the guy who's leaping? So, you know how they say on IMDb, you look up something and it's got usually two actors that are kind of bylines, sublines underneath it.
Yeah.
Those two actors and the actor who plays, Ian, not the guy who plays Ben Song. He's not in that top billing, but he's the lead. So, and not only Hudson, who is the bigger name. So it was like,
wait, I'm puzzled by that. IMDb. I'm checking this out.
Look it up. IMDb, let me know what you think.
Quantum Leap 2022. I mean, do they really?
It's Caitlin Bassett and Ian Mason Alexander Park. And Mason Alexander Park, so it is.
My initial thought is it
That's what their agents negotiated for in their contract.
Well, I was like, is it alphabetical? No, Hudson would be
Bassett. Before. Park. Hudson. Nope.
Yeah.
I don't remember the actor who plays Ben Song.
Order of appearance? That is interesting. I wonder what makes them do that.
I don't know.
I wonder if they're sitting at home. I wonder if any of them are sitting at home and going, hey, how come I am not top? I am not. Why are they right? higher up?
I was like, why is that? Makes zero sense to me. So those are most of my notes. And then I have, so I like the Asian actress who is a security person. Mm-hmm. She reminds me of Ming-Na Wen in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay.
Because she's the security person and she happens to be Asian American. So, and I hope that she gets some more levels. I think that that'd be cool. I like Ernie Hudson. He's just dynamic and fun to watch. I like the guy who plays Ian. The girl who plays Addison. I want her to have more levels. And I want her to have a little bit more. Yeah. So right now, all I see is stressed out anxious and not really any variation of stressed out anxious. Yeah. Now that being said, she's in a stressed out anxious position. Like,
yeah,
she comes by it absolutely honestly because her character, not a whole lot of room for joy, not a whole lot of room for fun and lightheartedness. She's trying to save her fiance. Like, it's, I get that, but I don't know. You know how some actors just are more captivating and intriguing just by their nature of being. Uh-huh. And some actors are more, are less varied and nuanced also just by the nature of who they are and what they are.
Yeah.
I feel like she's of the latter. She doesn't have a whole lot of nuance or varied things yet that we've seen. And I am absolutely on board with giving her the benefit of the doubt. And I hope that she gets better and different. Him, I thought we saw a lot of level. I thought he was charismatic and I think he can carry this series. So, but her, it also kind of made me go, what does he see in her? Like, I didn't see anything that really helped support their love or their romantic relationship. There was a little bit at the party, but I guess I didn't feel or see the chemistry between them. They said lines, but yeah. It didn't feel, Ooh. It was an interesting thing. Yeah. And I wanted it to be more, I wanted that connection to be instantaneous so that you're like, oh, I get it. So, but like when they were talking, I was like, oh, okay, well, from the context of their words, I can tell that they're engaged and that they love each other. Well, one would surmise they love each other by the comment of grab that bottle of bourbon and meet me out here in half an hour. But but I didn't see it. And I know that it's hard and it's, but you acting, don't have a lot of.
Acting is hard.
Acting is hard. Oh, absolutely. It is. But think about, and like at the top of my brain, I can't think off the top of my head of like situations where I'm like, I've seen a character for 30 seconds and I am absolutely intrigued or I get this. Well, no, yes.
No, there's definitely.
I'm going back to Firefly. I got Mel and Inara. Yeah. Kaylee.
Oh.
Those actors.
Yeah.
They don't do a whole lot. They don't say a whole lot. And you still feel things from watching them.
Now, do you think that that is a them?
I don't know if it's an acting or a writing
thing.
I don't know. Because I was reading the IMDb of Caitlin Bassett. She's military. She has been, and she didn't become an actor until like after she had a military career. So that made me kind of go, well, I can absolutely see her as an operative.
Yeah.
So maybe that is just, personality and who that person is, and that's what reads on screen. I don't know.
I'm like, is it possible to? Gosh, I'm like, is it possible to? will it just have someone as, do you think it's natural? Is it learned? Do you think it's learned, or do you think that is a,
don't know.
As an actor, you're.
Because so, maybe not. Maybe you just have to have that, a natural energy, glow, vivacity. I don't know, but we all can recognize it when we see it, but you can't ever go, oh, it's this. It's just like, they've got that something.
Yeah.
And that makes me want to know more. And I don't care about her yet. And I think that that's critical.
Yeah.
For the lead in a show. If you don't care about one of the people in the relationship, I really, really, really want to. I really want to. And I don't care about her. She hasn't given me any reason to care.
Right.
And I feel like I'm being super, super critical.
Oh.
But I care about him. And I care about everybody else in the lab. And I care about Al's daughter, who we've only seen her hand. Yeah, not because of that actor did anything. It was just the setup. Like, I want to know what happens. So it's interesting. And I'm really hoping that either the writing is different and it gives her a chance to be more, I guess just to show more emotion, more varied, but in the context of what that character is going through, so not a whole lot of room for more than what she had there. So I don't know how to fix it. And yeah, I think it's
the problem of, I mean, okay, maybe it's not. I was going to say, maybe it's the problem of the too many stories going on in one episode, but then I'm like, well, but you care about these other people. So I guess
I actually do. Like, I care.
So maybe that's not, she's just,
I don't care as much about the security person. Cause I didn't learn a whole lot about her and she just seemed kind of stoic.
Yeah.
But Ian got a lot of witty banter, which is always endearing. And it makes you like that character.
Yeah.
And also the character who plays Ben, the Leaper, he also got witty stuff too. and so that also is endearing to when you have little quips, even if they're dorky quips, you're just like, oh, hey, humor. Awesome.
Oh, you're my dork.
Exactly. I like dorky humor. It's fun. So I'm hoping that she gets to do more. But okay. I don't know. I wanted, if they're going to set up that this is a romantic relationship, that they were going to get married and they're madly in love, I wanted to see more of that from her side. But I also know people in my life who they are that way. Like, you don't outwardly see a whole lot of emotion on them.
You two have no chemistry.
They have amazing relationships and they're in very fulfilling marriages and they love each other. But they themselves just don't express a lot of outward emotion.
I think that'd be great to tell them. I don't buy you as a couple. We've been married for 20 years. Yeah, not really.
Yeah, I'm not getting it. So I mean, these people like that exist and they lead very healthy and fulfilling lives. Far be it from me to be like, I don't buy it.
Well, and that's a good point. It is interesting. Like, we do demand our fictional people to be more.
Make me feel something.
Yeah.
I invoke something. Yeah, exactly. So, which is why I'm like, I know how hard it is to do what they do. I know this.
Yeah.
So I feel very judgmental to be like, no, I didn't buy it. But you
try again.
That's what you're getting paid to do.
Is that.
And if it's not coming through, then maybe it needs different direction. Maybe, I don't know. But like, what do you do as a director when your actors are not giving you what you want out of them?
That is tough. I mean, that is why I think that
you
is
can't
why
just
so
say
much
act
time
better
is spent on...
because that's not a direction. You can't just say give me more, more what? Like it's not like. So I don't know how it would be, and I'm not the director. I am not a director either. Like I can't do that. You guys do a lot of stuff, and I can't do that.
I've definitely had in my head sometimes just act better. Like I have that, like I don't know what it is, because sometimes that is like a nut or formula to crack. Is I don't know what's wrong with this performance, but there's
something
wrong.
But it's just
wrong.
Not it. It's not what I need. It's not what should
and
be
sometimes
there.
Sometimes they're not. They're not feeling it yet, or they're just not. You know, I do think it is somewhat level where I've been talking a lot in my life lately about soccer coaching.
Yeah.
And there is an element that you are trying to uplift people and inspire them in to do the work because then they will become those things. Because sometimes they are just, you know, they need that in order to, I mean, sort of to get better. They kind of need.
Absolutely. And it's like any good manager, you can't manage the whole people on your team in the same way. You need, some people need more of one thing. Some people need more of something else.
Yeah.
It's sort of what a director is. A director is a manager. They are just trying to get the output from their team into one cohesive thing that they can put together in this thing. It's a different kind of management.
And sometimes it is the lack of, and I don't know for a TV series how it comes, because you know, you don't necessarily get a lot of direction as a TV series. Because sometimes it is, you're not a squeaky wheel yet. And I have to work on everyone else so much. And I'm so worried about these other things. Cause I remember like, remember one of my favorite actors to work with, Marguerite DiGiovanni. I forget if you guys worked together or not. If I put her in something. Yeah. I think she was she? No. Anyway, she was in a play of mine. And I remember her asking me like, she's like, I haven't got any notes in a while. Here and just wondering if there's get some feedback. And I was like, my thing was like, you're the best actor here right now.
You're the most stable.
I don't have
you get the least attention
to say. But then the moment like she said that, then I started, okay, well, you could do this better. Well, I mean, there's then I started picking apart the things that I could
since you asked
tweak, right? And so then she got a lot of notes. And sometimes this she was not a squeaky wheel. Others were either asking or in need of more direction.
Yeah.
But so sometimes we're just, you know, as a director, you're caught up. You're
triaging.
You're just trying to fix the problems that
are worse. Exactly. The biggest problems that we have to tackle first.
But as an actor, you're like, what up?
Am I doing what you want?
Okay?
I need validation.
You need validation. And that's the thing as a coach, you do need to, coach who is a director also. And that was my bad, that I should have been taking the time each day to give her positive feedback in some way to let her know that at least she's in the right direction. Notes are weird. I just had a realization with soccer and acting. You know, like in soccer, you don't want to give. Okay, well, in acting, you don't want to give line readings, right?
Yeah. Unless they absolutely can't get it, and then you have no other choice. But yes, you want them to get there on their own.
Yes. And even then, the choice.
Right, exactly.
To give a line reading is like. Mm-hmm. I will say anytime I've given a line reading, I felt like a failure because I was not able to communicate what it was they were missing. And even now I look back on it like, well, why was I so hung up on it being that way? Like, unless it is unless it has to happen for the story, like unless they don't say it this particular way, it will not work. There is a little bit of that is a little bit too much remote control. You're not a remote control, right? And in coaching, you're not supposed to tell they said you really want to ask questions, like, and get them to come up with the answers so they get it and they make the connection
it
and
better.
It's authentic,
yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And that happens, yeah. That's with actors too. Like,
yeah.
it's the same thing, just a different medium.
Yeah.
So I was like, God, I can't even remember last line reading, though I could probably just ask the actors that I've worked with. They
when did I give you line reading? Oh, it was this.
Oh, remember that? Oh, no. Okay. And I'm just, when is it important? When? I don't know. I don't even, I would probably, in the
I think
future,
it's
I'd
important
question
when the,
that more.
I think it's less important in drama, but very important in comedy. It can be because of the music and the rhythm and how it reads and how it plays. There's a lot of comedy writing that the rhythm needs to be such and the emphasis, or it won't, the joke won't land or it won't hit. And I think less so in stage plays and more so in like sitcoms and stuff where it's tighter and more reliant on the interchange of the dialogue at a certain rhythm or
and
a certain pattern.
I do think that's sort of why Equity gives you 3 days to recast.
Oh, to recast?
Yeah.
So you can cast somebody and then if after 3 days they're just not working, you're like, that's it, you're out. I got somebody else.
In live theater, yeah, huh? The stage equity rules, I believe, are 3 days that you have to recast without owing them more money than just those 3 days.
Just those 3 days.
Because so that is your mulligan. You have a 3-day mulligan to go, I made the wrong
thought
choice.
It was going to work. It's just
so
not.
It's very important for you to hit the ground running when you
absolutely
are an actor.
Uh-huh.
You can't futz around like, oh, let me just feel this character. If you're not the star of it that they booked, they made this for you.
They will
you
replace you. If
yes.
You're not doing
yes.
It.
Because we got 2 weeks to get this up. 3 days is already a long time. So,
yeah.
And because I think there is, I think ultimately, anytime I've had to give close to line, like, I'll say more than once or twice where I was like, just, it was either because I was a novice director and couldn't express myself, or I completely miscast it. That person was not right, and I fell for something during the audition that I shouldn't have.
Gotcha.
But ultimately, that's still on me.
Mm.
And that was probably inexperience as an actor or as a director to not know that person wasn't going to work in a, define that. And I think you're very much right about the rhythm of stuff. Yeah, how comedies that could be so. And this is probably why people tend to work with the same people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you know them and you know their voice, you kind of know what they're good for, what they can do.
Yeah.
And probably within their zone. I bet they could do this.
Yeah.
I bet I could get them there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or help them. They could bring to life this. So I see why you would. The more I work with, the more people I get to know and work with, the more I get why people precast. Go, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
I just want to know how this is. I just want to know this is going to be good. And I'll just book that same person.
Well, yeah. And when you're operating in like a community theater, you are at the mercy of whatever walks through the door. If you don't precast, if you don't find people in, you're just like, who shows up for the audition? Okay, this is the pool that I need to work with. And you hope you have enough people for the roles that you need and that they can do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's that much problem in the bigger houses and the equity world. I have a feeling there's enough actors out there that you'll find someone who can do what you want. But in the community theater world, sometimes there just isn't.
It's always a risk too as a director, because I do remember a play in college that I basically precast it. I precast one of the roles, and then I intended to book them if they I was going to put them in it if they auditioned, Mm-hmm. And then I heard for something that they were going to audition for this other thing that would have conflicted. And like, what the fuck are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing? And I pretty much had to call them and tell them, I'm going to put you in this. Yeah. They're like, oh, I didn't know if you liked or if you were interested. Because when I asked you, I was like, well, I couldn't be obvious about it.
I can't tell you.
Now I have to tell you because you're going away. And then in auditions, I had this actor who probably I would have given the role to because they were so good. But they had never done an actual play. Mm-hmm. They were always the second choice. They kept being the second choice to directors. And every director, every acting teacher was like, oh, they're great. They're really good. They're really good.
Why didn't you cast him? Well, I wanted this other one more.
Well, this other person. And there's they were more secure with this other person or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I tried to tell them, like, you were so good. And she's like, yeah, that's what I hear. And I think I was the last straw.
Oh, no.
They stopped. They stopped auditioning.
Oh, my gosh.
I was the last one that they, I think, auditioned for. And I think they, I don't know. I don't even remember their name now or where they are.
Yeah.
And I wonder that now, like, I wonder what they do because they were really good. It just, if I hadn't promised this to a person who's also my friend, so I can't do that. Yeah. I can't not cast them now that I had that.
Now that you told them you're going to cast them. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is the risk of doing it, of pre-casting. And you better be really comfortable with that. The problem was I probably shouldn't have the role open. Like, I mean, but I wasn't allowed to in that theater, right?
So,
or that the place. Yeah. I wasn't allowed to just have it open. So, or to say that the role's already filled. If I had in a real situation, like in a film where I'd be like, well, Emily is going to be this role. So everyone's going to read off of Emily and I'll read people off of that. And that's who it is. When you're allowed to be just honest about it, at least makes for like, you know, these torn feelings. Of,
But in an educational environment.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that. So,
But that was a lesson for me too. Then is man, if you promise that, you better hope
and that there isn't somebody better.
Or like that you're not open to anyone better. I don't, or not even better. Just and that's another thing I used to talk about. Like or even with this quantum leap, right? Mm-hmm. To relate it to a topic, there are probably 20 to 30 people that would be fine in this role. Mm-hmm. I think we too often get caught up in, well, the only person who could have done this is this actor.
Yes.
And if I would almost say to that, unless that was written specifically for them, that means it's not a good part. It's not really written that well. If it only one person could have done this, because there have been hundreds, nay, thousands of good Hamlets.
Yes.
Right? And everybody said, like, oh, my, they were the perfect Hamlet. That was just them. Like, I couldn't see anyone else doing that. Well, maybe in that vision or whatnot. But there's actually probably a lot of people that have done fine in that role. Maybe in this peak in their life or whatnot. You can have different reasons. But often get, I think that's funny. Just like when I've been told, like I was not cast in something that I ended up in, because the original person dropped out, and I was told, well, you know, you did better at the audition and connected with the other actress better, but they looked more like I imagined.
And that is the crux of our entertainment industry. Interesting.
And which wouldn't, by the way, which wouldn't happen now because now I'm BIPOC. They would be trying to figure me out. Not in 2001. 2001, people went with how they imagined. Now they're like, I got to reimagine this. Let's see. Yes. Oh, a BIPOC hit and they had a connection. Boom, they're it. Regardless of what I initially thought, because my brain's racist and I didn't mean it to be racist. I just imagined everybody was white in this because that's what I see. But so it wouldn't happen now. Now I've got a little advantage. I just got to, I can make the connection they want. they want this skin in there.
There you go.
They want to say they want the skin. Now I just have to be thin. That's all I have to do. So that's,
there's so much,
we won't piece together the fact that I lost 30 plus pounds before I got the Bartell drugs ad. Sure, it was probably just coincidence that I lost a lot of weight and then got the biggest commercial I've ever been in. Pure coincidence.
It was such a cute commercial. I love it. I watched it a bunch.
But at least now I won't get auditions for body positive. Anyway, that's a lot of code words they use in casting.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Hey, this is run a little
leap.
This is run a little longer than I thought.
We can cut out all that.
I love it.
Okay.
Because that's what happens when you watch a movie with Silence Lindenstein. You end up talking a lot.
Because
it should. Yeah. You know, I mean, this is a great discussion about actors and everything, what it draws on you. And that's a big deal. And we're going to be seeing, is this going to work out, or do they have to kill his wife?
And then get somebody else in there. Maybe. That I don't happens. Know. Maybe she figures out how to leap too, and then they need somebody else to holograph.
This has happened in Hollywood, that they made a bad decision, so they killed the actor. They killed the character. Sorry,
killed the character.
Never killed an actor. Okay, let me say that disclaimer. That never happened.
Well, it happens on soaps all the time.
Right. Oh, my God. Oh, you know what? I love that. I actually love it and appreciate it. I am one
We're
of the,
done with you, so you're going to die.
I am one of four people. Oh, no. I was thinking how they said the role of Henry is now being played by Scott Willis. What?
Oh, the recasting.
What? Uh-huh. You just recast in the middle of a... They walked out the door in one scene. The next scene, they walked in and said, the role of Philip is now being played by Henry Motson. What? But he wasn't yesterday. And then he's that for the next 10 years, right?
Exactly. That
person. There's no explanation. All the old photos have him in it. He redoes all the flashbacks. It's wonderful. I was one of, I'm one of 12 people in the world that wanted them to do that with Princess Leia. Because I was like...
To recast her?
Yeah. Because I was like, I want to know what the story was supposed to be. It wasn't about who was playing that. And people were like, you cannot. That is a cardinal sin. You just changed. I was like, but I wanted to see the story. I didn't want it to. I don't like when stories change because of outside dynamics. Lost did that a bunch. They changed things. Someone got a DUI. You're off the show. We're killing you. Okay. Like, what? Yep. I want to know what she was supposed to do. Okay.
That and like when we lost Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that Black Panther. Like, that would have been really good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
See how they treat it. Still don't know.
I know.
But hey,
we can go see the
leap back in time here.
Yes.
Quantum Leap. I think we covered what you're looking forward to the most. Or what do you think you're looking forward to the most?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to maybe bring Sam back. No.
Not this season.
But.
By the end of the season, you'll be happy if what happens.
By the end of the season, I will be very, very happy if I believe the relationship between Ben and Addison.
There we go. Okay. So we've got what? Is it 12 episodes? Do you know?
I don't actually know. 10, 12?
I don't know.
Something like that.
I'm going to have to look that up later. Good. That's how I do my research. After the show.
After the show. Talk about
that. Okay. So that's what we're looking for. I will be looking... I want one episode at least where does multiple leaps.
That would be cool.
I want to see him do little things to fix history. Then I will be happy if he does
that. I would love it if there's like six of them. One of them is he puts his arm in front of a kid who's about to get hit by a car, and that kid happens to be somebody big and important.
Yeah.
Picking up the keys. Somebody lost their keys in a Henry Ford. Just little things like that. Because that was also one of the delightful things about Quantum Leap, was learning at the end of the episode that, the person that you helped is this historical figure who is not the person you leapt into, but then they have an interaction with a very important person. And that's what changed the course of things. And you're just like, oh my gosh. It's so fun.
And the more probably bigger thing is, I hope that there is social commentary going on in these episodes. I really mm-hmm. want that. I want to make sure it stays at that sci-fi level of bring up issues.
That's what sci-fi can do well. That's what Star Trek has done very, very well, is Star Trek is this fantastical universe that has issues that we have today. And yeah. so they can present them and comment on them in a way that is not, it's a safe way. Like yeah. you're saying, it's a safe space.
Yeah.
And so it would be great if it would continue to do that with this one, because mm-hmm. that's what the original was. And yeah. so that premise would be really great to continue. Yeah. So I think multiple leaps would be cool. I want to believe Ben and Addison's.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see in a couple months or a few months, whatever. I'll look it up. Hopefully they achieve that, and I'll get to take a last look. So, Anna Marie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was delightful.
Yeah. And thank you, the listener, for watching a movie or a TV show with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. In the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. In the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas. Yeah.